Welcome back to the Geek Whisperers once again. This is the podcast where we bring enterprise IT into the world of social media and usually get into trouble when we're doing it. But we usually have a lot of fun. My name's John Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And this is Matthew Brandy.
Welcome back. Our topic this week, things I would never do again. So I didn't come up with this topic, gang. What's going on here? Why are we talking about this? Is social media that fraught with danger that we have to talk about the rocks we've run into?
I think this one was mine, which may indicate my negative attitude or my love of negative space, inverted thinking. I kind of like the idea that we're going to do this as group therapy. We've all made jokes that this is one of the, you know, best parts of doing the podcast together is to kind of get things off our chest in public. We're digging deep, people. We're confessing here on air.
Oh, yeah. And Amy, to your point, I mean, yes, this is a negative conversation, or at least we're framing it that way. But there's something about social, to answer John's question, there's something about social that just exacerbates the visibility of a given problem. Whether you're doing too much or too little, or you have a big failure, it is very, very public, or you're not doing your job well. So I think we're all going to run into those ideas, and we're happy to share our little therapy session with the rest of the world.
Well, Matt, I also think it's because we are trying new things, right? We're still discovering the social media space and how it interfaces with our audience and with our corporate life. And so we have a tendency, we've talked about this on the podcast before, we have a tendency to be people with personalities that seek out new things, that try new things, that don't just like to turn the crank and turn out the same thing over and over again every year. So we're trying a bunch of new things, and often they don't go so well. So with that as our theme, hey, Amy, why don't you start us off? What will you never, if you have a chance, what will you never do again?
I will never, ever again, bite off more than I can chew in terms of event plans. And what I mean by this specifically is I have learned the very hard way that it is better to be successful at doing three things well as sort of activities at an event, social type things, as opposed to attempting 10 and having a distributed audience, complete lack of sleep, loss of consciousness at a certain point, right-sizing social media at an event in terms of the activities.
That sounds like a regret and a good intention, like I will never, ever not prepare this report at the last minute again. So it sounds like something that you have a good intentions for, but how do you – you want to tell us some stories how you got in there, and how do you plan against this? How do you actually follow through on not doing too much?
And, you know, when this all started out – so I started doing social around events. It's only been a couple of years. It feels like a lifetime, but it's only been a couple of years. And when we first got started, it did feel like, what a wide open space. We can do all these things. We had all these great relationships that were forming, and more, more, more. And again, I won't name names or specific events. Maybe I should. Maybe I should be incredibly specific. But we would start with, say, 10 line items. And I have learned, and yes, I do like odd numbers over even. So in nature, we like to have groups of 3 and 7 and 5. But I have learned to limit myself to put an actual number and say no more than 3, for instance, things that we're going to do, and we're going to go after them intensely. So I'm going to spend time driving traffic to them. I'm going to spend – so you get more promotional time. So backing all the way up to answer the question, great ideas, brainstorming energy, wanting to do something with everybody – I've learned to consolidate. So number one, consolidate when you can to see if you can tie more than one activity together. And I will tell you, for instance, there was one event 1 year ago almost that we attempted to do about 4 different scavenger hunts. And all of them weren't my idea, in my defense, but lots of people came to the table. And again, in wanting not to quell people's energy and drive to do social things, we tried to support them all, and it was nuts because it's like, wait, are you doing that scavenger hunt or this scavenger hunt or that other scavenger hunt? People on the hunts became confused. We became confused. It lowered participation. It was a lot of energy and lift to get not the kind of results we wanted.
So scavenger hunts in general are a lot of work because they're a lot of planning.
They are a lot of planning.
You tried to do 4 simultaneously?
Because each different group. And again, I feel like I'm really calling people out. I love you all dearly, everyone in the sound of my voice. But different BUs, different product lines, and I'm sure other people in enterprise-sized companies are experiencing the same things. You get a lot of competing interests from your different different stakeholders. And again, in an effort to support them, rather than looking for ways to consolidate, things were already somewhat in flight, and we kind of went along with the motion. So I would encourage you, listeners, if you have a say, intervene early and say no. This is, we have this many things that we can do successfully, and this is what we're going to, this is all we're going to attempt. And put a number on it. And whatever is right for you based on staff, and make a template out of it. And then it seems formal. And if it's wrong, change it. Add one more next time or take one away.
Yeah, there is, as much as we don't like rules, there is an amazing power to a template. Sorry, three slots. It says so right there on the template. Of course, I just made the template up right before I walked in this room. But the template says three slots.
And John,
that's going to get tricky. I don't know about your internal, I mean, I hate to use the word politics, but that's what it comes down to, is that everyone, each of our business units at EMC, they work very independently. And that's to our progress, but also to our difficulties when you come to big events like EMC World that's around the corner, where everyone wants to stick out and also everyone wants to be doing the same thing as everyone else to make sure that they, no one else sticks out farther than them.
Well.
So you just have all of these competing interests asking for the same things, but also they're the special thing to make them different. And they all see the power of social, so they're digging into it. I don't know. I would love to hear more about how you address that conversation in your business units, Amy. Because for me, if I came out saying no, I'll actually just inspire them to go spin up their own side project as opposed to working through the core, what we're trying to achieve socially through the corporate team.
Well, Matt, when it's your own party, the rule of three is off.
Oh, sure. But let's say rule of 15, but you can have 85 slots. There's still going to be somebody that wants the 86th idea at EMC World or VMware Partner Exchange or Cisco Live. There's always more that we could do. I respect the idea that we're trying to limit that down, but I want to dig into the details for our audience to really hear, like, how's that conversation go? Because I'm interested in how yours goes, and I'm happy to comment on how mine goes.
Well, as you know, I love the improv life, so I think it's about saying yes and. So there's a way to say no but say yes. And again, John is teaching me wisely the ways of the template. I'm really learning about programmatizing and templatizing as a way of managing some of the chaos. And I think that bringing that kind of programmatic structure has been very useful. And Matt, you are a PowerPoint god. So with research backing it, and I think those two kind of combine those two forces and you've got the answer. So I can add the polite Southern smile to the mix. So between the three of us, we could say no to a lot of people and make them feel good about it.
Well, in the case of your scavenger hunt, you could have said yes, and let's kind of combine them all together.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly where I'm going. So I think you really do have to set these hard limits, even if you up the number for your own party. And I think you do say it with very clear metrics-backed voice of experience. Yes, we can do these. Again, if it's a type of activity that is actually successful. So a few things. If it's a type of activity that you've proven is not successful and they're trying to do it again, I think you can say very firmly, I can't support this with our staff. So if you do it, you're going to have to go it on your own. And if you're successful, document it and come back to me. I think you have to be that brave. So you can say, if you are choosing to go off on your own and go rogue, I respect it. I will counsel you now that I have not found these to be successful. And here's my backing. However, if you go and do it and you are successful, then come back and tell me and we'll see if we can reincorporate this. I always talk about it. I love food. I always talk about it as a menu. So we talk about a la carte options, what you can order, and I talk about right sizing. So I've totally stolen that language as well. But I think that is key to have people set and understand the expectations. And generally it works because I think the more authority – you can gain authority and credibility by trying things, being willing to try things, and then being willing to say, this really didn't work. And not pointing fingers but saying, you know, we all participated. We all did our best. What do you think we could have done differently? Or is this an idea we need to toss out and try something – put something different on the menu?
Oh, that's wonderful. That's a really clear explanation of how that plays out. And the yes and strategy is really what I wanted to hit on. That's the exact way that I have successful conversations with all the people that are internally frenemies. We're all one EMC externally, but everyone is, you know, trying to differentiate themselves. And when we have things like gamification on our community platform and social strategies that are highlighting key points of our messaging, everyone thinks their message and their community and their game idea is the most important. So we find very frequently we're saying, yes, you absolutely can be part of this. Here's the framework we're working within. It's your job as a marketer to take this framework and paint that picture that it has more to do with you than someone else, if that's your prerogative. But overall, the framework's not going to change. It's a yes and argument to make sure that people, we're trying to drive them to a single experience so we don't have 15 different scavenger hunts at EMC World in a similar way to your story. And I'm sure we've done that in the past. Yeah, it comes down to that idea of starting with the yes and then seeing how they can really enable people understanding that, at least in my org, they're marketers as well as social media folks. So just tell them to throw their marketing hat on a little harder and try to frame the conversation to use the same tools that everyone else is using.
Yeah, sometimes you have to just go let them wreck their car, though. I mean, especially if it's their car, their money, they're driving it. So I can't help you out with personnel. I can tweet about it or whatever. I can help you with that, but I don't think it's going to work. But it's your money, so go do it. And so I let people to go do that.
Sure.
You can't stop them.
Yeah, at some point, you're absolutely right. You can't stop them. If I can put a not too much energy, but a decent amount of energy into preventing them to like oversaturating the social call-outs, the social calls to action, I will do so because I see that as benefiting the end customer that's paying to go to this conference, that they're not confused, that they have four different game systems, gamification platforms running on the floor when really we're focused on just the one we have in the way we're using it. So I try to bring the cats into the herd a little bit.
Interesting. That could, yeah, you're right. That could be bad. As we started off with, four games at once is bad.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, Matt, why don't we move on? What will you never do again?
I hope I'm saying this with the utmost honesty, but it's a big goal to never pitch another half-baked idea.
Never's a long time.
Never's an extremely long time, especially when you don't always realize how half-baked your idea is until you have to execute on it. So let me take a step back. When I'm saying these ideas, I'm thinking of a couple things in mind. I also don't want to call out people, but I'm happy to fall on my own sword that there have been times in my short career in marketing thus far where I thought I had this incredible idea, and a lot of people corroborated that it's an incredible idea, we should run with it. And I pitch it, and I want it to get attention fast, so I jump the chain, I get it to my manager, and then his as quick as possible just to make sure the momentum gets building. And then they're like, okay, do it. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. And then what? You get to this point where you have this program that it can be quite interesting. It could be either a marketing campaign or a gamification platform or a community update idea. And you're starting to do it and you realize there's more research to do. You don't have the sort of programmatic templatized management structure behind it that you're expecting. And you also haven't really defined clear metrics of success or failure. So you have to be a project manager in reverse as opposed to paying attention going forward with the plan you've already designed. So it feels a lot like a puppy that just bit the bumper of a truck. You're like, I saw the truck and I wanted it, and now what?
So you end up having to back away gracefully and then say, well, if we did that, we determined it would suck, so we can't. Or is that what you do, or what have some of your strategies been?
Some of them are...
When you caught the bumper.
When I caught... Man, a couple times, let me give you two examples. One is I thought of a really cool idea. Jeremy Burton, my CMO, he's also the COO of EMC, he said, whoever has the best idea for EMC World, we want it to happen. We need a really big idea. So I took that as a personal challenge, being the person that I am. I researched this startup that does really cool things with data coming out of their light bulbs. And I thought of this whole show flow. I asked for pricing. I played with their product, and I sent this deck to him, really just jumping the whole ladder because he made the call out. And I'm like, yeah, why not? I've got nothing to lose. And he's like, yeah, this is a great idea. Cool. Make it work. And I didn't. I thought he was going to make it work because he was he was asking for the idea. I'm like, I baked the idea here. Go finish it off. Put the sprinkles on top or whatever you want. But just you've got the money, not me. But he's like, no, go make it work. So he sent me to the events team, and they're like, where are we going to get the money for this? I'm like, I don't know. Jeremy wanted it, wanted a big idea, and he said it was cool. So let's make it happen. They're like, yeah, big ideas have budgets as well. So I hit this wall where I was like, I need to find a business unit to sponsor this idea in order for it to happen. And now Jeremy's expecting it. So I have to execute on this, or I pitched an idea and it fell on its face and didn't meet the expectations of not just my manager, but my freaking CMO. And that was one of those times where I'm like, oh, I did not understand how an idea actually comes to fruition in this environment. And it was a big lesson learner for the way to pitch something for an event.
Well, EMC World is coming up next month.
It is.
Does this story have a happy ending?
Not at all. No. No, I've got a really pretty slide deck on how we can use this company's project called Byte Lights. That each light has a unique I/O pattern that you can trace, so you can do geofencing in areas that don't have GPS, because you can just use the compute power of whatever smartphone you have. It's really brilliant, and I had this cool map idea. Just think like Marauder's map from Harry Potter.
Nice.
Doing that on a show floor, but the cost was just going to be exorbitant, and the budget was already pre-allocated for this year. So as good of an idea as it was, I got a little, oh, you spoke before you thought through this, didn't you? And I had to fess up to it that, yeah, I did. I absolutely did. I thought it was something where if a good idea comes up, the budget will just show up. But that's not always the case. There have been times that it worked, but this was not one of them.
Well, where I thought you might be going was just kind of the corporate the impedance mismatch between the tactical and programmatic stuff that we do from day to day and where executives are looking at projects. I don't think conversations with executives are career limiting events usually, but I really do like to know what my entire thought is before I talk to the said executive, because they usually want complete problems and solutions. They're very busy folks usually.
Oh, you're right. You're right. And I think the addendum to the never pitch a half-baked idea, the more realistic claim is never pitch a half-baked idea way too far up the food chain.
Well, and I really like, well, caveat that one other time. If there's a time and place where it's open brainstorming season, and again, that I love your lesson from that of like it felt like that, then you did all this work and you put it together and it wasn't exactly that. And like you said, the sort of how budgeting works, it's different at every company. Sometimes there's, for anybody listening, sometimes there is that slush fund and magic can happen, but what a good point to research that, whether there is excess or overflow, if it's always pre-allocated. Like you said, before it goes all the way up, to know that budget and staff, that has been a life lesson hard learned, that budget and staff, proper resourcing for any idea is a very, very important one. And that doesn't go away for social media. And I'm bringing that up because of the focus of our podcast and sort of remind us of what we're talking about, that a lot of people get that perception that what we do is free. And we can do plenty on the cheap, but in the end, there's a whole lot of sweat equity and a whole lot of and funds need to be allocated for certain ideas. So anyway, just caveating that because I really love this story and I love the confession. So,
and it also plays into the conversations we've been having lately that I also had no idea of what a successful metric would be. I mean, it was just a you pay for this and therefore you did it. And there wasn't the, okay, well, are we looking for press impressions? Are we looking for a certain amount of activity around this? Like, what's going to be our positive, negative metrics around here so that we can see if we succeeded or we didn't succeed in the way we anticipated? And as much as those aren't always the differentiator of a good versus a bad idea, it does force you to put your mind in the forward-looking place where you're ready for – after you execute, how do you actually know whether it went well?
Sure. I mean, success, frankly, success in a corporate machine, the ones that we all work in, are predicated maybe on a couple different things. One of them is, think through resourcing, budget, what we're trying to get out of this, where it fits into everybody's priorities. The second is maybe who does what, who holds the levers of power, who can get something done, who will be receptive to these things. But it's definitely a set of corporate skills. I think the way social media grew up with a lot of consultants and with a lot of maybe outside corporate, with agencies or people who are working outside the corporate sphere, the social media industry got the reputation of being not able to do those things and not serious. I think that may be one of the things that we're dealing with now is how do you meld that history of being unserious, of return on engagement and not return on investment.
Yes. Love that.
Yeah. Great point. So John, tell us what's your history lesson? Confess and get it off your chest here.
Here's the thing. I think our theme this week is that games are hard. Games are hard. You think games are fun, but they're really hard. Because my thing I will never do again is also around a contest, actually. And I will never run a tell us your story contest without a great deal more due diligence than I've done in the past. And I say that, but VMware is running one, right? We just started one. They didn't ask me. We're running one again. We're doing something for VMworld. So corporations love customer references. Customer references are kind of hard to squeeze out of people sometimes because you go to the well over and over again to the same set of people, and you have to get, maybe you have a champion in a customer, but that champion would love to talk about you and your how well the solution was, but they've got to get the permission of their PR people and their executives. So sometimes customer references are kind of hard to shake out. So everybody thinks, okay, social media, let's have a game. Let's have a contest. Tell us your story. Wouldn't that be a great contest? We'll give awards, or we'll give prizes, or we'll give a virtual badge. Exactly.
It's so easy to do social media.
Yeah. People will just submit thousands of stories, and we'll just pick the best one. Well, first of all, contests are actually very difficult legally. So if you should not be throwing a contest without talking to your legal staff, because there are legal rules about contests and sweepstakes, and they are different in every state of the U.S. and in every country.
Lord. Yeah.
And then also there are often ethical rules inside your company to make sure that you're not giving your prizes to your friends. So all those things have to be dotted and, T's crossed and I's dotted. And so that often we've come out with – sometimes we've come out – in the past we've come out with contests that have just been the U.S. only. And, of course, everyone else in every other country of the world yells, but it's like, well, we didn't have time actually to sit down with a lawyer and hash out the rest of the terms and conditions for every other country. And, of course, if you're in if you're in Libya or Iran, you can't participate at all. So first of all, contests are much harder than you think. You really do need to get legal involved. Secondly, you're probably violating the terms of service on Facebook or whatever other platform you're going to use. People don't realize that you're not allowed to do – by the terms of service for Facebook, you're not allowed to ask for likes. You're not allowed to ask for posts on the wall. The very things that you instinctively think of doing that were probably okay in 2007 are no longer okay. So you can jeopardize your standing on Facebook. They probably – if you're an advertiser, they'll probably just spank you or something. But you shouldn't be doing that. And then thirdly, you can't overfish your fishing well. Fishing well?
Fishing hole.
You can't overfish because at one point – and this admittedly was a few years ago – because all the different parts of the organization decided to do this on their own, we had 3 or 4 or 5 tell us your story contests running at once or in close proximity right after each other. And some of them were just write in and tell us your story. Some of them were make a video. So think about that. Think about the barrier to entry that you're asking a customer to do. You're going to give them a backpack or something that you spent $30 on, and you're asking them to make a, spend an afternoon of their time to make a crappy video that no one really wants to watch so that you can get a customer story. So I will never personally run another Tell Us Your Story contest again.
And I have to say, I'm going to have to back you up on this one because or at least just reiterate, I know everybody thinks contests and sweepstakes are a great idea. Sweepstakes have a slightly lighter legal lift than a contest. The language is very important. I used to do a lot of them when I worked in publishing. Going through that kind of content, going through user-generated content, number one, like you said, they're more and more common practice now, so you have more and more competition for eyes and engagement, and you really have to have a clear mission. I have run one in my long career that was successful, and we had a clear objective, and it took an incredible lot of work to go through, and we had to do all kinds of tiering. It was a recipe contest, and we ended up crowdsourcing content before that was a thing. It was wonderful. In the end, we got what we needed. We got 5 to 10 reader-based recipes, which is all kinds of engagement and community-based, kind of crowdsourced around ribs. And so people were happy they were in the book. People were very engaged. We got lots and lots of competition. But I had to read over 4,000 recipes that all involved ketchup and liquid smoke. And they were the exact recipe. And I'm telling you, I will commit some atrocity before I have to do that again.
So you either get two entries and all your money is wasted because you only have two entries, or you get 4,000 and you actually have to read through them like a high school teacher.
Oh my gosh. And you have no idea. Yeah, when you are successful, exactly. You are overwhelmed by your success. So yeah.
I mean, John, you're living that right now with the VExpert program accepting nominations. I'm sure you're going to have a lovely laundry list of people to go through for the next however many months, including me.
That's just part of the program. That's the way I structured it. We need to talk about the VExpert program. Yeah. What I didn't realize, it was kind of when I made the VExpert program, it was kind of modeled after the Microsoft MVP program. And we should talk about these in a future podcast. But what I didn't realize is that the MVP program does admissions every quarter.
Yeah, it does.
And that lowers the workload. I do admissions once a year, so I'm about to look through, thousands and thousands of people's submissions.
Right, yeah. And with EMC Elect, we started with just about 400 entries in year one, but now that it's really kind of part of the common conversation in enterprise, I'm anticipating a pretty big ramp in the coming year. And, but that's one of those ones where that's a competition. I don't want to word it that way. Normally, it's an honor that we want people to acknowledge they're interested in. And in that, that's worth our time. But when we think about the amount of energy we put into that, when you flip it on its head to think of like, hey, it's a scavenger hunt, or hey, it's a video contest, like we're talking about, the investment you're getting back, as opposed to like influencer advocates, you're getting back some half-baked videos that you will never want to reuse, but you were hoping you might be able to. And paying attention to the output is a big part of that. We've had to put together a service portfolio or a service catalog of what we do on our team, and a lot of it's estimated time as well as like what you put in and what you get out and the cost. And that's been really informative for me in my day-to-day when I think about what I'm going to prioritize as an action for this conference or that one.
Mm. Another topic for another podcast, I think.
Oh, definitely.
We've done similar exercises. But I think Amy had it when we talked about maybe what the unifying theme of all these things we will never do again is, which is that people think social is fun and easy, especially quote-unquote fun, cheap. We all work for free, right? We all work night and day. And Amy's just flies around and goes to conferences, right? That's all she does is have bacon with people. And so people don't realize that, and sometimes even we, like we said, we don't realize how much work is going to go into a project to make it successful, especially if it's not completely anchored to business objectives. And it's frankly precisely the fun ones, like this cloud cred stuff we're doing, or like any of the contests or the gamification part we talked about today, to make something fun, just like to make something funny, like a comedian, is actually harder than to do something serious.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
And I think it speaks to the fact that all of us, none of this is wine and cheese here. We're all saying we love what we do. This is engaging for us. But to acknowledge, I think it's interesting that we have each admitted to undervaluing our own time, ourselves as resources, and saying, we'll throw ourselves on this fire, we'll do this, we'll make it work. which again speaks to personality and what gets us going in the morning. But to know that when you get into things with social media, I think a couple things. It is a bigger lift than is expected almost every time on the front, and it lasts longer than you think it will oftentimes. And if you don't have a clear either exit strategy, endpoint that you can measure and say it was a success, social can last a lot longer too. So you have to have, like you said, good marketing practices of objectives, tying back to the business, a story to be able to tell. And you know what? I think we've all talked about it here. You can say you messed up. I love this show for that reason of saying you can admit that you will never do X, Y, or Z either categorically or as an individual tactic and document it. I encourage everyone in the sound of our voices to document that, to pass it on, share it, pay it forward, share it back with us. I would love to hear. Tweet us at geek_whisperers with your I will never again. Let's start this meme. Share it because we will all step in it again in this kind of brave new world and doing things that are creative and fun. So save your brethren and sistren from the pain.
You know, I think we could probably just wrap it up here. I'll introduce one more thought before we go, though. Another theme or joint theme that we've had here is resource balancing. And we all work with large organizations with lots of divisions. And part of the I will never is trying to say yes too much, is trying to say yes to too many people at once, you know, too many contests at once, too many ideas for the conference. We go through the same thing at our conferences too. You know, too many just saying yes. Everybody wants a hand in the game. And that, I guess we've covered it with your story, Amy, but that turned out to be a theme as well for all three examples.
Right. I always try to sum that up. You know, we're told, especially in information infrastructure that we all work in, the enterprise infrastructure world, you're told to do more with less these days. And the message that we're giving everyone out there is start pitching it that you want to do less with more. And we want to boil things down to a smaller amount of things we're going to execute on and make them worth your time. That's social at its best.
And we're assigning more value to it then. The other thing that I have learned the hard way is if you assign no value to something, people will treat it with precisely that. It's kind of the a take on that broken window theory that if social is assigned and seen as valueless, that is, people will see it as valueless. So assign a value, and that includes your time. Think of yourself as a resource. You're a valuable one. And think of the actual funding. And again, think long term, because things that you get started, I had this conversation today, on the upside, programs that you launch successfully will become bigger than you very quickly. They need care and feeding unless you decide to mothball them, and they will become bigger than you and they will take your time ongoing. So both success and failure have prices.
Well, boy, I think we've summed it up. I think we've all been in the confession booth here in this podcast. I'm not going to assign anybody any penance.
I certainly feel better though.
Yeah. I like to think of it more as a therapist chair than a confession booth. I do as well. And I don't think we've thrown our colleagues under the bus. I think we've all talked about experiments that we will or won't ever try again. I like Amy. I love your idea about tweeting to us. We'll start a little, I will never thing on Twitter when this goes out. So think about that. I'm interested in what people have tried that hasn't worked. We all are. And also I'm interested in, you know, how you value yourself, how you put value on your service catalog and your team service catalog. I think those are both very fruitful avenues for discussion in a future podcast. You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers. You can reach us at geek_whisperers on Twitter, Geek Whisperers on Facebook. Hey, Amy, are we on Google Plus yet?
Oopsie.
at some point, we'll be engaging with folks on Google Plus or over at geek-whisperers.com is our blog where you can find all of our podcasts. You can comment to us, find a little bit. We'd love to hear from you, frankly. We're having a lot of fun doing this. We hope you're having fun listening. And we'll see you all next week. Does this story have a happy ending?
Not at all. No.